subject I have selected for discussion is the question of unity. How much unity do we have to have to bring this war to a successful conclusion? Now, I would like to ask Sir Cedric Hardwick first to voice an opinion on the subject. Sir Cedric.
Well, I think it's a very great compliment, Bobby, to ask me. It seems to me the question answers itself. But unless you have unity, you can't possibly win the war.
And when you say unity, what kind of unity have you in mind? Unity of action, purpose, and thought?
Well, first you must have unity of purpose, and then you must have unity of action. If I were able to describe to you what the appropriate action would be, I would be a military expert. The last thing in the world I really...
Modest.
Mr. Chamberlain, I understand you just recently returned from the East.
Yes.
Now, I think that you are perhaps better qualified than any to tell us something about your impressions of the East. Do we have unity?
No, by no means. We have a great deal of prejudice, which I think we know, if we're very fair-minded. We know that this prejudice comes from the bugaboo about communism. You find all your scare sisters and the columnists that every accusing and laying everything and all the fear of the disunity to communism. We are, the public are getting confused on this issue. And as we know, the communists, and in the pact that was announced by the Anglo-Soviet-American alliance on June the 11th, not only made a program for the crushing of Hitler and his hordes, but also outlined a program for to regenerate the world afterwards. Now, Russia is for that. And the pact that she made, the Anglo-Russian pact, is to the effect that each country shall have the right to determine its own economic policy and its own a political system. Now, Russia is absolutely in full agreement with that, and so is every communist. And every communist in this country has subordinated his interests for the one purpose and for the sole purpose of victory.
Dr. Ludwig, you were perhaps one of the most widely known and widely read observers of the European scene, especially Germany. The Germany before Hitler and the Germany during Hitler. I would like to ask you a very important question. From your observation of conditions prevailing here in the United States, would you say that there are any characteristics that would point to a similarity of conditions such as existed in Europe before the advent of Hitler?
We are here because they are not Europeans. We are happy that you are un-Europeans here.
In other words, you don't think that there are any conditions that would contain the same danger signals such as conditions in Europe before the advent of Hitler?
I'm a guest in America and much too clever to give any critics on American situation. I can only know what we know about Europe. But first, I want to tell you why all what Mr. Chaplin said was so excellent. Because he's not an expert, but he's a poet. The expert ruined our situation. Ask that one of the great poets of this our time.
What do you mean by a great poet?
Because to be a great actor is not very difficult. But to be an actor, a poet who acts his own story, we had not since Molière. I take the occasion to say it here to him directly.
Well, that's wonderful, and I agree with you 100%, Dr. Ludwig. However, you haven't answered my question. Is there anything else that you would like to say except that you respect the hospitality of this country too much and you don't want to voice any criticism? However, it isn't criticism that I want. I want a statement of fact. Do you see any conditions here that point to any danger to the democratic institutions, to the security of this country?
That is criticism on America, and propose myself to say all what you want on Europe.
Well, all right, and
I'm
tell me
what... I'm invited in this country.
What kind of conditions would you say led actually to the advent of Hitler?
Oh, two or three difference.
For instance?
First, Richard Wagner. Second, the disunity of the victors after the Great War.
Well, there we have a very definite clue now. You say there's an existing disunity. That is exactly what we wanted to hear.
Yes. If you speak on the unity of the Allies, I would say one of the greatest aims would be to make disunity between our enemies. That's Italy and Germany, of course.
Do you think it can be achieved?
Tomorrow. In 6 months, the Italian story is over. It was never so easy to predict than in this war. Because you have to know only the psychology of the nations. If you don't read communists and you don't ask the stars, then you can exactly know what will happen.
I see that. Mr. Bruce, do you agree with this view voiced by Dr. Ludwig, stating that Italy can be knocked out in 6 months?
I wouldn't know enough about Italy and whether she can be knocked out at all. I think if the RAF gone as they are, it might be less time than that. But as regards the question of unity, if I may say, I'm a British subject and I want to be careful what I say. I've just come back from Texas, where I went right through, and I think that the feeling amongst the poorer people in this country is absolutely magnificent. But there is far too much, I felt, criticism of everything. Criticism of your president, criticism of the army, trying to criticize England, Australia, and India. And I feel this, that we are together now. We're United Nations. And I think that criticism is a very dangerous thing, and unless we know what we're talking about, the wisest thing we can all do is to not criticize, but to back up our leaders and to keep our mouths shut.
But you do know. Well, Nigo, you do know, but there is criticism. You know that these columnists are trying to divide the country. There are certain columnists in this country. And I'm going to speak because if this is a free country, and if this democracy advocates free speech, then I'm one that's going to speak my mind, even although I am a guest in this country. Because I believe your democracy is so frail that you cannot be criticized, then I don't think it's worth fighting for. And we know there are certain factions in this country that are trying to confuse the people. As you say, the people are all right. They're 100%. And so are the boys that are fighting in Africa there. And they don't question. They don't haggle. They're giving full cooperation with their life and they're shedding their blood and they're dying without question. And yet we haggle over whether $25,000 a year is communism or not. I certainly think if that's communism, there's a lot of people in the United States that will vote for it. Because believe me, the people who think that it's horrible for people to live on $25,000 a year just don't know how the other half lives. Then we know very well there are certain factions. I just made a speech in Chicago, and I happen to say that while people are anti-communist, I am going to be communistic. I'm going to be pro-communist, in other words. I'm neither a communist and I'm not anything. But when I see that people are deliberately trying to divide this country, they've used the bugaboo. Hitler used the bugaboo of communism he thought he could get the Allies to go on his side to fight against Russia. But we didn't fall for that. No. And then had he have succeeded in that, then he'd have used imperialism to defeat England. But we never felt for that either. And had he have succeeded there, then he'd have used capitalism to defeat America. His whole idea is to divide and conquer. And there are still. And there are still Nazi agents in this country, and watch out for them, I say. Because I tell you that the communists and everybody must be. We must have a unity, and only by the strength of unity can we win this war. We must have the full strength from the capitalist to the communist, and they must subordinate their interests for at least
the duration of the war in order that we shall achieve victory. And it's not going to be an easy task.
Mr. Lloyd, may we have a word from you on the question of unity?
Well, the question of unity, first of all, of course, everyone realizes we must have unity to win. Now, the matter of criticism, well, I think, personally, it's a very healthy thing. It's a part of the American way of life. We are fighting a war, and we are sending our boys, and I say our boys because 1921, I forswore allegiance to King George to become an American citizen. I did that because I felt this form of government was the finest. We're sending our boys out with the promise that they are fighting to keep our way of life. I hope that in spite of the criticism, no matter what commentators or broadcasters may say, and what the new Congress may do, I feel sure that it's getting into all our hearts, into all our souls, and I'm sure it's in the minds of all those men who are going back into Congress, that this country must be kept alive for our way of life, the way of life that we've known. It's democracy. Just imagine what it means. With democracy, those people, way back in history, took a wilderness. And because they could think for themselves and speak out with no fear of man, they turned a wilderness into a beautiful garden, into which we of the other countries could come and be men without fear of any man. And if that goes out of this country, I don't want to go on living. That's what I can say.
Thank you.
Now we'll interrupt a moment for station identification.
You are listening to Robert Arden's roundtable discussion of current events with Sir Cedric Hardwick, Frank Lloyd, Nigel Bruce, Dr. Emil Ludwig, and Charlie Chaplin, coming to you from Studio 5 in Warner Brothers Hollywood Studios. And now back to Robert Arden and his guests.
Dr. Ludwig, as I understand that you are now preparing a new book on Beethoven, I think that in this book you are going to discuss, or rather I presume that you're going to discuss a great deal of the pre-Hitler conditions in Germany.
Pre-Hitler, yes.
Pre-Hitler Germany. I would like to ask a question which, I would say 100 times a week is being asked of me, either by telephone or by mail or in personal contact. What do you believe are the chances of a collapse of the Hitler regime before the Allies can crush it by a military victory?
The collapse comes exactly as in 1918 because it's a collapse of nerves. The German nerves are not the English nerves. The English is stubborn. Excuse me, gentlemen, you are here in English. The English is stubborn. I say that with the greatest compliment, because without his stubbornness, you couldn't hold out. You understand? He is educated since 300 years for self-responsibility, to think himself for himself. The German likes to die for his fatherland, but not to think for his fatherland. He had never some special responsibility, and if he is in his town without uniform and without a boss who says, Prince, zwei, drei, bang, right, then he's lost because there is no boss. How could he be an educated personality today after 300 years of lacking of liberty? When he had 14 years liberty, he was very unhappy. Mr. Hitler is absolutely right when he speaks against the popularity of the Republic which we founded, my friends, and we wrote the books and my friends were the ministers. Nobody was happy. He's happy because he has a boss. And now, in the big bombing of the English, the boss is not there. He's a great soldier, an excellent soldier, because he's obedient and don't like to think. But if he is without uniform, he is lost. And that is one of the reasons, because you will have a quicker breakdown of nerves in 43 than in 1980. Second, you know that it's the greatest difference between the generals and the Nazis. You will have the breakdown of Germany when Germany is in Africa and in Asia. And yet in Berlin, there will be breakdown just as in April, in August, and then in October 1918.
Do you agree with that opinion, Mr. Bruce? I see you made some notes there.
Well, I was just thinking that we're all talking about Germany, and I'm not in the position to discuss Germany as much as Dr. Ludwig. But I feel this, that both my friend Cedric Hardwick and myself fought against the Germans. We must realize that the German army is possibly the greatest army of all time. And the German army was not beaten in the last war. It was beaten because of internal trouble. I think we should realize we're not only fighting Germany, but we are fighting Japan. And I've just finished reading reports from Tokyo by a man, by your Ambassador Gruz, who was 10 years in Germany and 10 years in Japan. He says, in his opinion, it's quite possible that Germany will give way, as they did in the last war, internally. He says that that's quite a possibility, and it might even be, as Dr. Ludwig said in 1940, that they are the best-trained troops in the world. They live on practically nothing except rice, and if they're asked to cut that to half, they can live on that. And that it is a religious war with them, and that it's a very, very serious problem which you've got to all face. Forgive me for digressing for one moment from Germany, but we are at war with both those nations, and I think that we may hope for an internal disruption in Germany in the next year or 18 months. But I don't think we can hope for it or expect it in Japan, if one is to believe, and I think we can believe, that book, which I think that everybody listening to me should read, because it's a very true and a very frightening book. Thank you.
I would like to summarize what we have stated so far. It seems that every one of you is agreed on the fact that we need unity of action and unity of thinking to win this war. Dr. Ludwig predicted a collapse of Nazi Germany within 1943. Now, based upon these opinions, I should like to go into the discussion of several questions that have been handed to me from our audience here. The first question reads as follows. How about fascism in the United States?
Well, undoubtedly, I think there is a certain amount of fascism in the United States. I think it's easily recognizable, if we're honest about it. I've seen it in some of the press. I've seen it, as I said before, in the columnists, amongst certain of the columnists. Undoubtedly, there are certain factions in this country who think that they can make a good deal with Hitler. And there are certain factions in this country who fear democracy and who fear the people and who fear the people's desire to make a better world after the war.
How about fascism in Great Britain, Sir Cedric?
Well, it's some time since I was there, but I don't think that in Great Britain they're thinking about anything else but defeating Hitler. I've had a lot of very interesting letters from there recently, and I find that there they have complete unity of purpose. I think where there's been a little confused thinking tonight, sitting here listening, is that you can have criticism of how to achieve something, but where the criticism becomes dangerous is criticism of whether or not you're going out to achieve it. And I think that that is a very serious point which should be considered in the light of what we've been discussing. In England, there is no criticism at all, as I understand it, of what sort of government is going to be in the future. Neither is there any criticism at all of whether or not you should make a deal with Hitler. But there is criticism, occasionally, and healthy criticism, of the way in which it's to be accomplished. And that, I think, is the true criticism of democracy.
Would you like to add something, Mr. Bruce?
Well, I've talked enough for this, thank you.
Well, of course, the experts are the people to decide how it's to be achieved. And after all we can do as laymen is to be unified in thought. At the back of this war, we're not only going to win it by munitions and by soldiers alone. It has to be courage and heart and unity and enthusiasm and one whole purpose in mind. Let the generals do the strategy, but we must be morally unified.
Well, I wasn't referring so much to the strategy, but if results are not being achieved, then perhaps some of the experts are not quite right. I find that sometimes I'm bewildered by reading the outpourings of the experts on this war.
Yes, it's perfectly true. But nevertheless, in all wars there's confusion. I think all nations and all governments muddle through. I don't think there's any such a thing as a perfect, efficient government anywhere.
I think if Mr. Chapman has read the Beveridge plan, he'll, I hope, feel that England is going a step in the right direction.
Well, we all hope that steps in the right direction will finally bring us closer to the goal as it is. And for the moment being, we are just trying to decide which steps to take.
I'm not interested in the post-war, so long as each country has the right to determine its own kind of government. I'm not interested in it.
Here is a very interesting question, which I'm going to hand to Dr. Ludwig. Do you think that Hitler is going to sue for peace?
Of course he will. He will try it. I hope nobody will follow him. Because the great danger here is on the day after the murder, after the death of Mr. Hitler, which we will see, he will be murdered by his own people. That was always so in history, that any conqueror is on the end finished by the hands of his people. And that is the great danger, because then in America, and perhaps also in England, will it be people who think the General von Thoma, who is now in England, is a better man? He is not. He's not. Mr. Goering is much too fat to be a leader. That is Falstaff on this team. That's impossible. But even if he is slim like Mr. Thoma, he is not an honorable man. The great danger is that anybody could think here, and I speak with very important Americans, who thinks, well, the right way is unpolitical. She is highly political. And without the military caste, Mr. Hitler was nothing. They made him. So, what I am most astonished is the fact that in America they write every day a line, the Nazis are bebitten. Instead of saying the Germans. It is not the Nazis with which you have a war.
Here. I think that's quite right. Dr. Ludwig, I would like to take this opportunity to start a little private quarrel with you, or rather a little private argument with you.
Go on.
A little while ago, you made the following statement. You said the Germans have been a nation used to being bossed around for about 300 years. Then after the last World War, when they had liberty or some semblance of liberty for about 14 years, they were miserable.
Yes.
Now, let us suppose we are going to crush the Nazis very shortly. What then has to happen in order to prevent the German nation from being miserable after 14 years again and creating a new Hitler?
Three conditions. I wrote it 20 times. If you want, I say the 21st time. Now, three conditions. First, a great occupation army, which takes out of the hand of the Germans, who are passionate soldiers, any weapon. That is to say, also the policemen. What is this?
Policeman? The club.
Second, 500 or 2,000 educators, not to educate the boys, because the boys would laugh about them. They speak German as I speak now, colorful English. People who supervise the teachers, because we were there in 14. You don't know, perhaps the gentleman on my right didn't know it all. We were there. The Republic was betrayed in the beginning, in 20. I received in 20 a letter, and there was an article in Turkish Beobachter, you know what is now Mr. Hitler, said, in 20, if I don't leave Munich tomorrow, they will kill me. I was a very innocent private man and wrote some articles in favor of liberty and the Republic. The Republic was boycotted in the beginning, and the great murders were of my great friend Rathenau, you know, and others, were in 22, not by Mr. Hitler. So, if you want to make it better now, you must take education out of the hand of them or supervise them in European way. Sir, you cannot leave them to government. There is no liberal Germany. There is in Germany or protectorate or communistic Germany. I have nothing against both forms. But don't believe that some of our good immigrants here, we have the power. I am a Swiss citizen. I don't speak for me. But there are excellent people here. They have no background in Germany. In Germany, you can govern only 5 or 10 years with a strong hand. This strong hand may be, of course, helped by the great heroes behind the barbed wire that are the great heroes of today. There is Mr. Niemöller and others. But you cannot think that you make a new Reichstag and new free elections and then say the Germans are good people, they were misled. They like the whole story. Nobody in the world, no president, was elected in such a democratic way than Mr. Hitler. He was the head of the strongest party. The president, just like the king in England, took him as the head of the strongest party. He had 52% of majority. Then he made 3 plebiscites, and the whole German nation, 99%, were in favor. You can say that some 10% did it by fear, but not 99. Everybody was delighted because there was a boss. They were terribly shocked in 18 when there was not a boss and everybody had to think himself. We never think himself. We think on philosophy, music, and poetry. But there are the Yugas who have to think for us. Why have I to think? They told it to me. That so you cannot educate, you cannot make a lymph, do you say so? Vaccinate.
That, yes.
You cannot make democratic lymph here to vaccinate them. That's not in 5 minutes. That's possible under the strong occupation army. And if you say it is too expensive, then I tell you that the occupation army for a month costs much less than one day of the war today.
H.G. Wells put it very nicely when he said that that Nazism is one stick in the case of epilepsy.
In other words, I can summarize your opinion in this way, Dr. Ludwig. First, you insist on the maintenance of a strong occupational force in Germany after this war is won, and secondly, to begin an educational campaign under our government.
Yes.
Now, that finishes that question. I'm sorry that I couldn't pick an argument with you, but I happen to agree with you on that.
Only because you have your...
But don't you think that might encourage militarism all over again? Isn't it a good excuse for other military people throughout Europe?
Everybody will be terribly tired after this war.
Well, don't you think Germany itself... Well, do you really think that it's absolutely compulsory, necessary to have an army of occupation?
What are you going to do, sir?
Well, I mean to say, they have been bled white just as much as Russia is being bled white, and as we will be bled white before we get through with this war.
Of course,
as you say, everybody will be very, very tired. And dangerous people.
The military spirit in idealism in this sense, they have the idea of vengeance. In 300 years, they were beaten only twice. After the second time, everybody said, next time we make it better. You know, like that. And now, how can you think that they will not repeat it? You were betrayed once. How can you have the intention to be betrayed another time?
Of course, I feel that if ever Russia gets into Berlin, we won't have to bother about anything. I think you'll find every German citizen in Russia building up Stalingrad.
Berlingrad.
Berlingrad. Here is the next question, gentlemen, which leads us from Berlingrad to Dalaungrad. It says, can we and should we trust Dalaung? Now, that is something which my learned friend, Sir Cedric Hardwick, would like to expostulate, I'm quite sure.
Well, I've never met Dalaung, but his record is not one, that leads one to trust anybody, but I think that is something that we have to wait for history to tell us. There may be a good deal more behind the Dalaung business than we know.
What do you make of today's proclamation in which Dallon stated that he has no political ambitions, that the moment France is free again and the people can determine for themselves what kind of leadership they want, that he would retire into private life?
Well, I think there's a slight suspicion that he hopes the French people will want him.
Every dictator said, first, I have no political ambition, from Caesar on to Hitler.
That seems to finish the question of Dallon.
Finish with Dallon.
The only thing is...
Here is a question that seems quite interesting. Won't prohibition interfere with our liberty? I don't quite get the question. However, it sounds very intriguing. Is there anyone who wants to answer it?
Why do you look at me when you say that?
Didn't you bring me
prohibition
some wine?
Is it
not so prohibitive, if I may say?
Well, it did take away a liberty from a lot of people in the last prohibition era, because they were selling liquor and a whole lot of them went up. That's the term, liberty. I think another reason that the people of this democracy will speak for themselves is no sooner they realize that prohibition was a horrible mistake, they changed it, and they did it through this form of government.
It happened to be the Democratic government, too.
Right.
Here's an interesting question. What are the chances of the four freedoms being realized all over the globe?
Well, do you want me to speak on that?
Of course.
I don't think I have very much to say, other than we know very well that Serbia and Russia have a 20-year alliance. And it's more or less based on the mere fact that they want to a post-war collaboration for the purpose of reestablishing the world. I suppose they will inject the four freedoms. Freedom of fear and the freedom of speech and of want, which to me is the most important one. And I think England has made a gesture in that direction. As you said, Bruce, I think it's...
Call me Nigel, Charlie.
Did you say Johnny?
Charlie.
About these alliances, though, quite seriously, Charlie, are you, these 20-year alliances, you put much trust in alliances? I don't.
Well, I
Russia
think...
had an alliance with Germany not very long ago.
I know, and Germany broke it. It wasn't Russia. And also, Russia, of all nations, of course, all nations are humbug, more or less. I mean, you can, as you say, all nations are opportunists. I'm speaking personally. This is perhaps off the record and on the air, but nevertheless, it's very personal. But of all those nations, I think Russia has carried out her obligations and her pact and has kept to them more than perhaps any other nation.
Speaking of carrying out obligations, here is a question which fits right into this particular pattern. Do you consider the military engagements between the forces of the United Nations and Rommel in the North African desert a fulfillment of the pledge given by President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill to Foreign Minister Molotov for a second front in 1942? In other words, the question would be, is our African invasion a second front or not?
I think I would leave that up for Mr. Stalin to say.
And to General Montgomery.
Who?
And to General Montgomery.
Well, I mean to say, if it's not helping Mr. Stalin, who has 3 million Nazis on his neck, I mean, if he's dissatisfied, then I say it isn't a second front. On the other hand, if he is satisfied, then I think we in America should be satisfied.
But I should like to disagree with my friend Charlie Chaplin over his statement that he thinks that Russia have fulfilled their obligations more than any other nation.
Yeah.
I want to know why they filled them any more than Great Britain. With the exception of the Czechs, in which Great Britain undoubtedly let down the Czechs, they had no signed agreement, which France had.
Well,
you must remember that Great Britain went to war because Poland were attacked. And Russia, at one time, were actually an alliance with Germany. Great Britain had been at war for 3.5 years. They have backed up every promise they made to every nation, just, in my opinion, just as much as Russia. And I'd like to have it pointed out in what way Russia has fulfilled their obligations any more than my country.
Well,
thank
I think
you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think it's on the records that they have fulfilled all their obligations and they've lived up to their pacts. Of course, I mean, we won't go back into past history because we want unity. You're talking about... You're talking about the integrity of nations. They're all pretty near the cow's tail, pardon me.
I would like to ask you a rather personal question off the record, if I may, Mr. Chaplin.
Yes?
Is there any intention on your part to embark upon a diplomatic career?
Not in the least.
Not in the least.
I am only interested in justice and trying to debunk the humbug.
I would protest in the name of Europe if you become a diplomat. We would lose the greatest actor, and we have actors enough about in the diplomacy.
I'm afraid I'm very undiplomatic. I've been accused of being a communist just because I want unity.
Communists have the most excellent diplomats today. I know them.
Well, here are two questions.
I've been trying to say that, Doctor.
Well, since it has been said now, I would like to bring these two questions before you. One of them I'm going to give Dr. Ludwig, and the other one I'm going to formulate in such a manner that each one of you will have an opportunity to venture a guess or make a prediction, and I'm going to note it rather carefully because it will be very interesting to come back to it next year. The first part of the question is, Dr. Ludwig, is Hitler insane?
He's very clever insane.
In other words, you think he is insane?
There are very many real insane men. He is not real. But insane is in any case.
Insane he is. All right. Now I would like to take this pencil here and make a few notes in the order as the answers are being given by my experts here. The question is here, when will the war end? Now, I don't know...
What war? What war? Which war? Germany or Japan?
Yes.
Well, let us split it and say the European and the Pacific war.
Let us split the
now,
enemy.
Now, I'll start with a roll call as we are seated here around the table. Sir Cedric, what is your prediction?
Well, first of all, I'm not quite sure what you mean by the war. Do you mean the actual cessation of hostilities that they may not all cease at one particular moment? If there were a sudden collapse of Germany, my personal feeling is that Germany will collapse certainly before the end of 1943.
1943. How about the Pacific War?
The Pacific War, I think, may be a little more difficult, but it seems to me that with the combined forces of United States, Britain, and the Soviet Union, that Japan certainly wouldn't be able to stand out for very long, because the entire air power alone... be something that would be almost impossible to fight off.
You've forgotten one factor, Cedric. That is China.
I should have included China, but China has already been fighting Japan alone. I meant that the other forces would be released from combat elsewhere. That's why I didn't include China.
I think China would like to finish the job herself. And probably she will. She may have that privilege.
Sir Cedric, may I ask for a clarification of the question? Well, how long do you think the Pacific War will last after the European War is over? Give us any kind of a date that you believe in.
Well, I would say 18 months.
That would bring it up to middle of 1945. Mm-hmm. Right. Dr. Ludwig.
I don't know anything about Japan. I was never there. Every child in America knows more about it. But I know Europe very well. And I can assure you that you can quote me as a very bad historian. A European war, that's to say, cessation of
hostilities.
It's not over in 1933. First Italy and then Germany both by psychological reasons.
Right, Mr. Bruce.
I say that Germany at the beginning of 1944,
yeah,
and that Japan, it just depends whether Russia allow the Allies to have Vladivostok. Russia not yet at war with Japan. If Russia allow the Allies to have Vladivostok 2 years later, 1946. The end of
46. End of
46.
Mr. Lloyd.
Well, as regards Germany and Italy, well, I don't think we can take Italy into consideration anymore because that's Germany. We know if it was up to the Italian people, we wouldn't be at war with them today. It's just because they're controlled by the Germans, definitely from a military standpoint and from a policing standpoint, they're still more or less in the ring. Germany, I hope she does collapse very soon. I feel it would be a very bad idea for any of us to listen too closely to stories of internal trouble in Germany. They're very clever. They're very clever in sending out that sort of propaganda. I think what we must do is to say, let's forget the date. But go out and try to do the job as quickly as possible. Regarding Japan, I think the date or the year of finishing that job depends mostly on how soon we get to cleaning them out of where they've gotten in. I think the sooner we start it, the better. And the longer we delay, the longer it's going to take to get them out.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Chaplin.
Well, I have no idea when the war will terminate. I do know we mustn't be too optimistic. Even this North African affair, we have a long pull of about 3,000 miles, as against 60 miles by water, and coming through that shoe of Italy, and being fed by Central Europe, and right down to the very toe, and then she crosses that small body of water. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we don't have to wait 2 or 3 months before we can clear them out of Tunisia. Then, as to the war itself, with the latest news in Russia, is not particularly cheerful. And I think that, however, we might have to go 2 or 3 more years before we can defeat Germany. I think the question of Japan is a simple one. Give all the munitions to the Chinese, and they'll do the job themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chaplin, and I suppose this is all we have time for tonight. I want to thank you one and all for being my guests tonight.
You've just heard a roundtable discussion of current events presented by Robert Arden, your foreign correspondent, whose analysis of foreign affairs is heard exclusively over these stations each weekday, Monday through Friday, at 7:45 p.m. Mr. Arden's guests tonight were Sir Cedric Hardwick, Frank Lloyd, Nigel Bruce, Dr. Emil Ludwig, and Charlie Chaplin. America Looks Abroad with Robert Arden is presented by the 12 Southern California offices of Dr. Cowan over KFWB and KFOX. This is Joe Yocum speaking from Warner Brothers Hollywood Studios.